All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we've got a wild one for you. We are going to be talking about this movie called PG Psycho Gorman. This is a fun little movie that just came out. It's in it's still in drive-in theaters right now, and I don't know, possibly some regular theaters as well. And it's on VOD where I watched it, because I did make it out to a drive-in a couple weeks ago for the first time, but mostly just watching movies at home still. Freaking pandemic. But anyway, this movie is completely insane, and it's about this little girl who befriends this monster creature thing and has the ability to control it, and they get into some shenanigans. It's a weird movie, and it's very gory and very ridiculous and a lot of fun. With me to talk about it is JC from the Screen Fix podcast. He's been on the show a couple times in the past, but it's been a little while, so I'm glad to have him back on the show. I always have fun going on his podcast as well. And so we're going to get into that in a minute here. But before we do, I want to remind you all, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever it is you listen to podcasts. You could also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser if you're enjoying the show. And follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Also, don't forget we have a Facebook group called Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And we also have a Patreon. I gotta mention the Patreon, because this week we are going to be adding a bonus episode from Awesome Movie Year, which just finished up its sixth season on the films of 1984, and before moving on to their next season, which is going to be on the Awesome Movie Year of 2003, they're posting a couple of bonus episodes, and one of them will be exclusive to the Patreon, and it is on Prince's Purple Rain. And it is a very fun episode, let me tell you that. So check that out, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I combine content from all the podcasts that I'm involved with, as well as from my music career. Lots of great content over there, so check that out. And with that said, let's talk about Psycho Gorman. All right, so back on the show with us, it's JC from the Screen Fix podcast. How's it going, man?
It's going great. I have to say, I am so happy to be here. I've been on the show a few times, not in a hot minute, and I have missed you. I have missed your face. Like, I don't know how this is possible, but every time I come on this show, we're both a little bit older, but you somehow keep getting more and more attractive.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you so much.
No problem.
You know, it's a steady regimen of sleeping most of the day, and then just watching movies and podcasting about them the rest of the time, and that's all I do. So, you know.
That is the key to long health and long life.
Yeah, that's right.
Sleep and movies. Oh my God, some of these podcasts are going to last way too long. All out there.
So your return to this podcast, by the way, comes for Psycho Gorman.
Yes, you traditionally asked me to do the movies that nobody else wants to, and I'm okay with that. I'm just happy to be here. You know,
I don't know, I wonder if this movie, I honestly don't 100% know what the reaction to this thing is. I feel like a lot of people love this movie, and then I feel like a lot of people haven't even heard of this movie, and I don't know, I'm not really sure where the general consensus is, but I know I had a lot of fun with this movie. Was this something you were like actually looking forward to when it came out, or did you just kind of just check it out? We're like, no, oh, this is weird.
This is actually pretty funny. Like, I had just heard of this movie when you said, hey, does anybody want to fix this with me? And I was like, that is, I have absolutely, it's funny because you asked about fixing it and I had planned on watching it like that day. Like I had heard about it, read about it, saw it, and I'm like, well, you know what? I'm going to watch this anyway. And I know this is right in a horror comedy wheelhouse that I really enjoy.
Sure.
So I was like, you're damn right, I want to fix this. I mean, not fix this.
Yeah, I was gonna say, fixing is what you do, JC.
I'm already screwing up. That's my part. Sorry.
We piece together.
You asked if you wanted to piece together instead of fixing.
Yeah.
Piece together. I'm sorry about that.
No,
I totally
got
mixed up.
You're good.
So you were asking if anybody wanted to do puzzle pieces, because you had a bunch of them. And I was like, hell yeah. So because I had already read about it, so I was like, hell yeah, I want to do this. So you got me. You got me here, and here I am, and I am ready to not fix things. I am ready to
piecele it together.
I am ready. I am ready to puzzle piece movies.
Let's do it.
With you. This movie, Psycho Goreman.
Yes. PG Psycho Goreman, by the way.
PG.
Full title. All right. You know what? We'll get into a lot of stuff about this movie along the way, so let's just jump in.
Oh, wait.
What do you got for your first puzzle piece?
Oh, wow. Just jumping really right
in.
Yeah,
let's do it.
Okay, well, I have to preface all of this with every puzzle piece that I thought of, I wrote down, and then I went and watched some interviews with the director.
Mm.
And the director wears every influence on his sleeve. He mentioned every single movie that I thought of a puzzle piece for.
Wow.
And then I tried thinking of three more deep cut puzzle pieces. He mentioned all of those too. And I really didn't know where to go with it, because the guy just says, oh yeah, this is based on this movie, and this is based on this character, this is based on this movie. Because it is a movie that is an homage to a certain very specific niche type of movie.
Yeah.
And he definitely will tell you what inspired every single thing in this movie. He's basically puzzle pieced it together for
us. That's exciting. I need to check out that interview afterwards.
Yeah, it's a couple of them. And what I'm going to do is I am going to just tell you the one that I thought
mm-hmm.
of. And then I will tell you what I found that he said about it after I say what I'm going to say about
it.
How about
cool,
that?
Cool, sounds good. Let's get to it.
All right, so one of my first puzzle pieces, and actually it was right from the beginning, was the movie Highlander.
Mm.
So Highlander has, you know, that wonderful 80s blue aesthetic to it, and it's got sword battles, and of course we have plenty of sword battles, but the first thing that made me think of Highlander was Highlander also has the opening red text.
Mm.
So this movie opens with red text that is scrolling, and the first thing I thought of, it's because I watch Highlander at least once a year.
Okay.
I really enjoy Highlander, and immediately I went, okay, that's red text, that's Highlander. The first thing that it invoked was Highlander. And also, Highlander very famously has one band doing the music for Queen, and this movie also has one band doing the music for it, a band called Blitz Berlin.
Yeah. So, I've been doing a bunch of scores for indie films lately.
Yeah. So we've got, so that was my first one was Highlander. And of course, I went to the tape and the director said that he also loves Highlander. And he says that's why he fills his films. That's why he said that his films end with sword battles.
Okay.
So he loves Highlander. And that's why he likes to put in lots of swords. And that was my first puzzle piece. I have a bonus trivia.
Okay.
So that the red voiceover with the red text in Highlander, the person who is narrating that is Sean Connery. And the reason why that it sounds all why there's like an echoey ethereal component to his voice is because he recorded it in his bathroom. So the echoey sound is his voice ricocheting off sinks and toilets. This is Sean Connery, so probably a gold toilet.
Yeah, sure.
At least a gold toilet seat.
Yeah.
That's what only gold is good enough to caress the bottom of Sean Connery.
Well, we're getting some good information here with these puzzle pieces so far. This is
boom.
This is good. I like it.
That's what. Yeah. All right.
I haven't seen Highlander in a long time, by the way. I do want to revisit that series one of these days. At least the first one.
Well, the series is not great. Mm. Highlander 2 is awful.
Sure.
Highlander 2 is really terrible. Which is actually funny because the director did say that he took a bit of Highlander 2. And put it in this movie. Highlander 2 is terrible. But then there was the very popular Highlander TV series with, what was his name? Adrian. Yeah, sexy, hunky dude instead of weird accent Christopher Lambert.
I honestly have no idea who was in the TV series.
Adrian Paul? I don't know, whatever. He was big in the 90s. The hunky Highlander dude.
Hunky boy. We know that PG likes his hunky boys.
He does. Hunky boys. PG. Okay. Yeah, so that's great. My first piece.
I like it. Well, I'm going to move on to my first piece, and this is kind of the first one that came to my mind. The mixing of kids with just ultra gore violence for comedic effect. I thought of the 2010 comic book movie Kick-Ass.
Oh, yeah.
With what's her name, Hit Girl, I believe, and just ultra violence and a precocious kid who just loves it and thinks it's so much fun and so funny. And it is such a fun thing to watch because, you know, kids being kids, but then being surrounded by all this over-the-top gore is great. And this movie, a lot of time when you get to these kind of like B-movie inspired kind of films, people will talk about just how completely insane and over-the-top they are. And then you watch them and you're just kind of like, this doesn't really quite live up to what everyone's talking about. But this movie is pretty freaking gory. I mean, there is a lot of decapitations. We get people melting and all kinds of shit. So I was very, very pleased with the gore in this movie. And that is a big plus for me.
But it's that gore that only scares like kids.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like this, it's that gore that... You know, this is the reason why when we think about a movie that scared us when we were like 80s kids or even like late, you know, early 90s kids, you know, when movies, when they were still throwing kids in really gory stuff.
Yeah.
This is why there were, you know, and also I believe PG is a nod to how PG films were so scary for kids that they had to make the PG-13.
Sure.
Rating.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yes. There were some PG-13 movies that would scare the crap out of me when I was a kid. Now, PG movies that would scare the crap. But that's why you go back and you watch that old movie that scared you, and you watch it when you're an adult, and you're like, this is so corny.
Right.
So cheesy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, it's just that, like, that practical effects gore where you can absolutely notice that suddenly the real head has been replaced by a fake head. Or, you know, all those kind of things like that, which give this whole genre its charm. It's undeniable charm.
Definitely, definitely. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
My next piece, I think, was an obvious one. It was one of the first ones that I thought of. Little Kid Controls, Instrument of Death, a really easy one, Terminator 2.
Sure.
Of course, our boy John Connor. Is a kid played by Eddie Furlong, you know, Eddie Furlong of many a 90s girls teeny bopper magazine cover boy. I know my sister loved him, my Eddie, and had all of his posters torn out of bopper and big bopper on her door and on her walls. Mm-hmm. And she loved him. But anyway, he was in control, of course, the ultimate killing machine, Arnold Schwarzenegger's T-800, and there's lots of nods to it in here. I mean, even from, like, you know, having to help him, like, reconcile with, okay, when I tell you not to hurt anybody, that doesn't mean, like, instantly kill them so they don't feel pain,
right,
or something like that. Like when when Psycho turns that cop into basically, like, a living, like, melty pain creature, and it's trying to kill itself the whole time, which was actually pretty funny.
It was very funny.
Very morbid, but very funny. You know, some of those things, like, are very Terminator 2-esque. And also in Terminator 2, the Terminator kind of comes to understand human emotions.
Right, right.
Like when he says, I know now why you cry, but it's something I could never do. Mm-hmm. He sacrifices himself and all that kind of stuff. I mean, at the end of this one, our character Psycho does say that he realizes what love is. You know, that, you know, those, you know, so there's a lot of parallels there with Terminator 2 and this film. And also, you know, like Eddie Furlong was kind of a punk ass. And I'm sorry, but Mimi is definitely a punk ass.
Oh, definitely.
In this,
just a little shit.
Because, yeah, I mean, it's far funnier for some punk ass kid to control a monster of death than like a really, it would have been a completely different movie if her brother had the control. Would have been some wimpy, like it definitely would have leaned more PG than R had the
I think
had
so.
The wimpy brother controlled the monster.
You know, you also have the bad guy character showing up in the form of like an authority figure and tricking the parents. So you got that too.
Oh, see?
Yeah, multiple Terminator 2 levels. I definitely agree with everything saying there.
Big time.
And what a great movie to take inspiration from. It's the best action movie ever. So.
Oh, yeah. And I thought that I was brilliant coming up with that puzzle piece. But the director said, quote, as a kid, I was mesmerized by the relationship between John Connor and the T-800 in Terminator 2 and the way this relatable kid could suddenly have a badass villain as his pal. So, nothing the director didn't throw in on purpose.
Perfect.
But that's going to happen with every puzzle piece that I could possibly come up with ever.
That is that's exciting.
Throwing all of his references right there in front of us. All right. So yeah.
All right. Well,
I am ready for another Rosen puzzle piece.
I'm going to throw a curveball in here, okay?
Oof.
I'm going to go with something that's not a movie. I'm going to go with the band Gwar.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Talk about
big
rubber,
costumes.
Rubber suits.
Yeah, big giant rubber suit spikes. Costumes and just totally over the top and absolutely insane everything, along with the heavy metal, you know, aspects of the score. And I just totally over the top insanity and great costume work and everybody being a little bit different. I think costumes will come up in more of my pieces along the way. But definitely Gwar, though, you know, they did it amazingly. Have you ever seen Gwar live?
I've never seen Gwar live other than like bits and pieces that I've seen like online. I've never like gone to
so
one.
Much
I think
fun.
I'd probably pee-pee my
probably,
pants.
Probably, knowing what I know.
Like, I want to see Jewel.
Well, Jewel would be a good show as well, but
Gwar is a good one because I feel like a lot of this, even the like the fantasy sequences and whatnot, are like they look like the flashback stuff. They look straight out of like heavy metal magazine or like trippy fantasy album covers and like blacklight posters from the 70s and 80s for sure. And Gwar was right in the mix with that aesthetic.
Absolutely. So, yeah, they're like kings of that kind of thing.
Here's one. A third puzzle piece is Masters of the Universe.
Right.
Okay, so the Masters of the Universe movie. So Masters of the Universe also had something that, you know, a film that very easily they could have made take place all in Eternia, or in this case, this film could have all taken place in Gygax, or, you know, be off-world. But of course, what do we know? We know that it's cheaper to make a movie that does not completely take place off-world and takes place on Earth, which is why they took He-Man and the Masters of the Universe and said, why don't we throw him on Earth? It's cheaper. We're not going to build all these sets for this movie. And this movie has that same feel, taking something that is part of some crazy epic, like one small piece of an epic struggle going on in the universe, and taking that very powerful force and just dropping him into suburbia. So it had a very... This movie is almost like as if they took like Skeletor from Masters of the Universe and dropped him onto a planet and said, a kid controls you.
Sure.
It would be, you know, so I got a big Masters of the Universe vibe out of this movie.
Yeah.
And again, I thought I was a genius. And then the director of this movie said that he loves Masters of the Universe and how the film is indicative of the late 80s high sci-fi concept with budget restrictions, bringing the action to Earth that he grew up with. He called it a trope he loved out of necessity, because that was the necessity of the studios.
Yeah.
But he also said that he finds that kind of movie more engaging than the wish fulfillment of a Marvel movie.
So, ooh.
Interesting. He did mention Masters of the Universe as one of his inspirations as well. So yeah.
Killing it.
So yeah, Masters of the Universe for sure.
I like it. I like it.
And I just love a hero in a diaper.
Yeah. True.
Essentially.
Yeah.
He-Man.
That's right.
Oh, interesting JC side note.
Okay.
When I was a kid, my mother, I remember being so small, 4 years old, 5 years old, something like that. My mother took me to this like shopping mall to get my picture taken with He-Man. I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, He-Man. But when I got to the chair and it was this oiled up, tan, blonde guy, shirtless, wearing essentially like a brown diaper, I started crying uncontrollably screaming. And my mom had to take me like out of the mall because I was hysterically crying from this oiled up man and having to sit on his lap.
That is quite a insight into JC's early life there.
yes, early. Still traumatized. It's actually hard for me to watch Masters of the Universe for a few reasons.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, I'm going to go on to another puzzle piece here. And as listeners of the show know, I also produce another podcast called Awesome Movie Year, one that JC here pestered for many, many months to do an episode on this particular movie. It is a movie from 1996 called Space Jam.
Oh, wow, you got Space Jam vibes from this.
A little bit. Okay, so we get these humans who find these underground creatures who are locked in battle with this intergalactic force, and it all ends in a sports battle. So, you know.
Yeah, this one did end in a game of crazy ball.
Yes, crazy ball instead of basketball in the case of Space Jam. And, of course, these are kids instead of Michael Jordan and Bill Murray and Wayne Knight.
I mean, they're basically giant man children.
Yes,
sure.
Absolutely. So I got a little bit of Space Jam vibes here, brought into a more heavily R-rated world, let's say. You like it?
Yeah, I love the fact that from Psycho Gorman you got R-rated Space Jam. Yeah. I don't know how you made that connection, but I like the way that your brain works. It works differently than most people. I feel like you're on a higher wavelength, really. I mean, you have to be with the amount of podcasting you do, with the amount of music you make, with your skincare. Whatever the skincare you're doing on your face, keeping you so young and vibrant, the painstaking products you use in your hair to look like, you know, so curly and well kept.
Yes, thank you for all that, by the way. I appreciate it. So let's move on to the next piece.
You know, my main three were those movies. I do have a number of other movies that I think just have little bits and pieces.
Okay.
I kind of mentioned this a little when I said, I mean, we've kind of skirted around this a little bit, but there's obviously, this is not a movie, but there are obvious nods to Dungeons and Dragons in this.
Sure.
PG comes from the planet Gygax, which is a nod to Gary Gygax, the creator of Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, okay.
So that's why you get I believe that's why you get a lot of Dungeons and Dragons type concepts, like Archduke of Nightmares. There are types of orcs mentioned. There are Templar cards in Dungeons and Dragons. I think there's a lot of Dungeons and Dragons fantasy going on in here, which are also pieces of what you mentioned, Gwar.
Totally.
We all, you know, also mentioning the Blacklight posters, the fantasy album covers of that.
Yeah, heavy metal takes its all of its cues from that world, for sure.
For sure, from that Dungeons and Dragons world. And the director very obviously points to Dungeons and Dragons. This one I did not get in an interview, but since he did call the planet Gygax, it was very obvious that it was a nod to Gary Gygax.
Right.
And Gygax is used in so many movies. Like, once you know that the creator of Dungeons & Dragons is Gary Gygax, you'll start noticing things called Gygax in movies. And it's always nods to Gary Gygax.
Sure.
Always thrown in as an Easter egg. And as soon as I heard Gygax, I went, oh, Gary Gygax. So
that is a great name, by the way.
Gary Gygax.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was G&G, the creator of D&G.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Interesting. I like that.
Yeah, that wasn't my best work. So, I have a bunch of other small ones, but I want to throw it back over to you. So Dungeons and Dragons was a puzzle piece.
Well, I'll jump right off of that onto another game, actually, a video game.
Ooh.
But also movies as well. That's the Mortal Kombat series. All of these characters, the character work, again, you know, we could say inspired by Guar, of course, like we were just talking about. But yeah. Also, I mean, these could easily fit into like one of these kind of fighting games where everybody has like a different look. And I like that all of these alien type creatures, all these monsters, all have different unique looks. And like one of them's like a robot, one of them's like a brain robot thingy, and then of course Psycho Goreman himself is whatever the hell he is, just like a kind of like a boogeyman monster kind of thing in armor. So everybody's got their own like really crazy over the top character design, a lot like Mortal Kombat characters and other like fighting games like that.
My favorite was the one that looked like a washing machine with body parts sticking out the top. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Look, not a washing, like a wash machine with a like a front loader washing machine. Yeah. And at one point, Psycho just punches the face, and it starts to drain out blood, and the little legs and arms sticking out the top kind of fall back inside of like. What if one of the bad guys was a front loader washing machine, clothes washing machine that gets punched in the face? It was incredible. It was
that's why what I said towards the beginning of this conversation, like a lot of people when these kind of B movies come out, a lot of people be like, you got to see it. It's so crazy. It's so over the top. And then you watch it and it's really just not as crazy. It's not crazier than anything you've seen before. This movie is fucking nuts. You know, so stuff like that is just crazy.
Oh, for sure. But that's why you watch something like this and why you love, like it takes a certain type of person who's not watching it to get any deeper meaning out of
sure.
it. They're watching it for pure entertainment, and they are watching the effects. Like, look at that creature.
Yeah.
Oh, look how they, like, look at, like, you know, they're watching it for the effects.
Yeah.
Basically, they're watching it for the gore effects, and the story is secondary for sure when you watch something like
My favorite moment in this entire movie, I mentioned it in my Letterboxd review, is actually the final climax, the final battle scene, where Psycho Goreman needs a sword and he starts tearing pieces off of the villain to build a sword out of.
Yeah, to make a meat sword.
Now that is something I haven't seen before. And that's what you go to this, is to see something you've never seen before.
Yeah. I need a sword. I'm going to make it out of your bone and meat.
Amazing. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
My next piece, actually, I thought it was very obvious. And I hate saying this because it's... I don't know. It just, this puzzle piece has got to be old and tired, but there was definitely Star Wars in here.
Sure.
Because, and it's very obvious right at the beginning, when the Templar kills the guy at the council meeting for calling her religion silly. Straight out of Star Wars. Straight out of Star Wars. She's talking about, oh, my religion, blah, I'm going to whatever, the galaxy. And then the guy's like, your religion is silly, and she kills him right there. I'm like, okay, there's Darth Vader.
Yeah,
right,
I guess
there.
So.
And then, guess what? I'm not very brilliant, because here comes a quote from the director.
Uh-oh.
So basically, not a quote, but he says in the interview, he loves Star Wars. He said he was a Star Wars kid growing up, so you can see right where he took Darth Vader. But also, to your point in your last fix, the various soldiers, whatever,
monsters,
the various, like,
whatever,
aliens in the galaxy.
Yeah.
He said that he loved the one thing he loved the most about Star Wars was the bounty hunter lineup.
Mm.
Like in that scene where it's got all the different bounty hunters, and you wondered, like, man, what's that one's story?
Right,
what's going
right.
on with this one? You know, like when you're all those kind of things. He said he wanted the creature. He wanted there to be like attention to detail amongst each individual creature,
yeah.
And he wanted you to want to know more about them the same way that he felt about the bounty hunter lineup in Star Wars.
Yeah, I actually had Star Wars on my list as well, and for that exact reason, I was almost going to combine it with Mortal Kombat because, like I said, it's just like this big cast of completely different characters, and they all just look so weird and different. Kind of makes you wonder about each and every one of them. So yeah, definitely Star Wars belongs in there as well.
It's like Star Wars meets like a pothead in front of a blacklight poster.
Sure,
like
sure.
Very intense.
All right, I'll go to my next piece here, and that is Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. The second one where they just go balls for the wall insane and just throw everything in that they could think of, and it just becomes pure nonsense, pure ridiculousness. And I actually found last year before the third Bill and Ted that I love this movie. I didn't realize it as a kid, but I love just how insane this movie gets. And, you know, obviously Station could fit right in with a lot of these monsters. And then Death, I think there's a lot of similarities with Psycho Goreman as this, like, you know, he's Death, he's evil incarnate, and yet he's just kind of, you know, he's kind of neutered in his abilities, and so he just becomes along for the ride, and just becomes sweeter and sweeter as the movie goes on, which I think is, you know, a big thing of why the Death character in Bill and Ted Bogus Journey was just so much fun.
Oh, for sure. And that's funny that you mentioned that the director did say that he tries to make sure that he treats every film like it's the last one he may ever make.
Oh, nice.
So he tries to hold nothing back.
Yeah.
So that's pretty awesome that you got that out of it, because it was definitely what he was trying to do. So I think that's pretty great.
Nice. Nice. Well, what do you got next?
Oh boy. So this one is a very tiny nod, but the movie Critters.
Hmm.
So the movie Critters also has an alien transforms into human being scene in the very beginning. If you remember Critters, the Critters are like intergalactic, like criminals that escape from a prison. Those little critter guys.
I actually don't remember the plot of Critters criminals. Like at all.
They are criminal. You need to go back and watch Critters also, because Critters is another just it's funny. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. So Critters, like a lot of the comic relief in Critters comes from actually these two aliens that have been like the alien cops that are supposed to go bring the prisoners back. They look like these weird whatever. They're these aliens, and they look at like a video screen of like one of them looks at a pretty normal human and becomes that person.
Mm-hmm.
The one alien though looks at like a picture of like a rock star. He looks kind of cooler, like a rock star guy.
Yeah.
And it's pretty funny. And in this movie, and it happens like that where there's a lot of like face melting and like morphing into a human
face.
Sure. And this has that same scene with our Templar. She like turns that human into a little flesh cube. And then uses the flesh cube to her face starts melting. And of course, it's really funny because the one alien is blocking the other alien's eyeballs because it's so gross.
Yeah.
But she's like, she also becomes a human. So I really liked the human morphing scene. And also, like, this movie really has some of the spirit of Critters. And the morphing scene is, you could put them side by side and see the similarities.
Yeah.
You know, just that great late 80s cornball practical effects, and I
got to go back and revisit it one of these days for sure.
Right. And the thing is a lot of filmmakers are now like aping that aesthetic.
Sure.
Especially like filmmakers that have like not a lot of budget but they still want to make something.
Yeah.
Because now you can crank out special effects at home that are higher quality than at the time that those movies were being made for nothing. This director's first film, Manborg, was made for $1,000.
Wow.
And he was borrowing film equipment from his high school to make it, and he did all the practical effects himself. And that movie was Manborg, and I actually just watched it today.
Oh yeah.
And Kung Fury is Manborg. Like Kung Fury wishes it was Manborg.
Oh wow.
Because they have like similar level of like special effects, but Manborg predates Kung Fury, but basically Manborg is like a little bit of a better Kung Fury. And it's I don't know, it's just a fascinating thing to watch and to know that this person made it for like $1,000. And now these things are a dime a dozen, like these movies that are aping that late 80s like B budget aesthetic.
Sure.
You can find them everywhere on Amazon Prime. You can find like Mega Time Squad, Turbo Kid, Galaxy Lords, Zero Charisma, the FP2.
Oh yeah.
There's like like to a, I guess like a little bit bigger budget, I guess like Deathgasm, like, I don't know, there's just all of these, they're all aping that style. It's pretty funny because I feel like on a larger budget, like your Stranger Things, you know, or what else is something that just came out that like kind of apes that Amblin? Like anyway, it. I feel like the, like it, yeah. Right? So I feel like the higher budget, they're kind of like aping like that Amblin 80s aesthetic. Sure. But on a lower budget, they're really aping like your Roger Corman's,
yeah, yeah,
or your Troma films or your Canon films. You know, I feel like that's, you know, they also want to get in on that aesthetic because it's something that they all grew up with and they have nostalgia for, but they only have the budget for more of a Troma or sure. a Roger Corman movie. And I think that's great. And sometimes one of them breaks out. And this is one of those that just broke out.
You know, speaking of which, it wasn't even on my list, but I'm just gonna throw it in here as my next puzzle piece. But Troma films in general, definitely, yeah. I think is a great puzzle piece to have on this list. Toxic Avenger and all of their kind of just classic gore and effects and creature stuff and just pure ridiculousness every step of the way. Yeah. You know, definitely
like non-PC.
Yeah, non-PC for sure.
They're like purposely non-PC and like gratuitous.
Yeah,
in every with a capital G.
Oh yeah,
for sure,
absolutely. And those movies are so much fun. And that's another thing about this movie. I know it's getting like a small run right now at like drive-ins and stuff like that. I'd love to watch this movie with a crowd at like a theater once, you know, that is a thing again. I wish that I would be able to get to see this that way.
For sure.
What do you got next then?
I guess do yours and then I will run down a small list of things that we didn't get to that he also said inspired this movie. So like the pieces that like we didn't think of.
Cool.
Does that sound cool?
That sounds good to me. My last one is, I think, an easy one. It's something I haven't watched. Again, 80s, something I haven't watched in a long time. But a little movie called E.T. With a precocious kid and an alien, I think definitely needs to be on this list. Certainly a little bit of a different tone here. You know, it has to be there on a list of movies that might have inspired Psycho Goreman.
That is absolutely apropos because the inspiration for this movie came from when the director, when he finished the movie The Void, he had just finished, he did Leprechaun 3 or something ridiculous like
right.
that. He did one of the Leprechaun movies. He was home and he said he was like just relaxing after that experience of making Leprechaun. And he said he was watching Rawhead Rex, like the 1986 horror movie where like a evil entity starts like raising havoc across the Irish countryside.
Okay.
A Clive Barker short story made into a Clive Barker film, I believe with a Clive Barker screenplay, but it's terrible. But anyway, this movie, he was watching Rawhead Rex and he said to himself, he asked himself, what if you combined Rawhead Rex, like this awakening of an evil spirit, with something like E.T.? And he specifically said that like this movie is essentially like what if Rawhead Rex and E.T. were like combined. So basically like meshing like contradictory tropes.
Sure.
Like meshing the family adventure with the sci-fi horror fantasy.
Yeah.
And like what comedy can be mined from that.
That's great. That makes so much sense too, because that's exactly what this is. It's a blending of two very specific tropes in classic movies.
Yep. Yeah, and it's being mined for this the comedy, like what just combining kids with a whole bunch of gore.
Yeah. So let's speed round what you got left then. What do you got?
Sure. So the speed round that I have left are, let me see. He cited Roger Corman's attempt at a Star Wars cash-in with production designed by James Cameron, Galaxy of Terror. I don't know if you've seen Galaxy of Terror.
No.
I have seen Galaxy of Terror. I will put a small warning on there that there's kind of a controversial, weird alien worm rape scene in that movie. So let's just, if that bothers you, don't watch Galaxy of Terror.
Sure.
But Galaxy of Terror is a Roger Corman movie. And then Class of 1999 is one, which was a sequel to the movie Class of 1984.
Okay.
Essentially, like, this movie is if they took basically, like, students have become so unruly that they get like robots to be the teachers, and what if those robots just had the like carte blanche to murder kids? So another one is a movie called Sinjinor, which I've never seen, but he really likes that one. Sinjinor, he likes Guyver 2, and he also mentions the 1999 Jamie Lee Curtis movie Virus.
Okay.
Yeah, so those are just some of the other movies that he mentions while talking about this movie, or are like inspirations of his overall.
I love that when a filmmaker is just absolutely wearing that on his sleeve and just loves talking about all of these inspirations. That's great.
It's great. But one of my first thoughts when I was done was I was like, wow, what? This is a movie that poses the question, what if Thanos was your bitch?
There you go. There's your pull quote for the poster for sure.
Yep. Yeah. And also use the aesthetic and just all of the tropes of a late 80s schlocky practical effects B-budget horror movie.
Love it. Well, I'll go ahead and do the finished puzzle then we'll get into some closing thoughts here. So the finished puzzle for Psycho Goreman includes Highlander, Kick-Ass, Terminator 2, The Band Gwar, Masters of the Universe, Space Jam, Dungeons & Dragons, Mortal Kombat, Star Wars, Bill & Ted's Bogus Journey, Critters, Troma Films, E.T., Galaxy Terror, Class of 1999, Sinjinor, what the hell is that movie? I gotta see what that movie is. Guyver 2, and Virus is our final list there. I had so much fun with this movie, man. Do you have any other like thoughts on it that we didn't quite get to while going through the puzzle pieces?
Not really. I mean, I did tell you though that I watched Manborg.
Yeah.
And the end villain in Manborg is basically the red version of Psycho Goreman. So it's like you could see like the evolution there.
Nice.
I was like, okay, so Psycho Goreman and the end guy in Manborg are essentially the same person, just a different color. Mm. What's interesting, like the design of PG was actually, the director said, like what would get him excited if he was a little kid and saw that as an action figure on a store shelf.
That makes perfect sense. I mean, I would have like, loved this thing for sure.
Right. And he said that he gave the designer for Psycho Goreman, he said he wants, like, think of Skeletor, Molossar from The Keep. You ever seen The Keep?
I don't think I ever saw that.
Like, that totally could be another puzzle piece because, like, Molossar is very similar to Psycho. Mm. It's like a B-budget schlocky movie because it does have a guy in, like, a rubber suit villain.
Yeah.
But it somehow has Gabriel Byrne and Ian McKellen acting opposite the rubber suit man. And then he said for the designer to look at Baron Karza from Micronauts, Venom, Megatron. It's basically like a mashup of Saturday morning cartoon bad guys.
Yeah, that's perfect.
To create this guy, to create PG.
That's perfect.
So, yeah, I found that interesting. So you can see all of those characters, like in either how he acts or how he looks, you could see a little bit of all of those guys in this one character. He's basically like when you, like if you were to go online and use one of those like celebrity mashup tools and be like, what does it look like when, Scarlett Johansson would have a baby with Tom Cruise.
JC from the Screen Fix podcast.
Oh God.
What would that look like?
I would be into that. Oh wait, if I had a baby with ScarJo or if I had a baby with Psycho.
Oh, wait, take your pick.
Psycho, because then I can control the universe, maybe. Yeah. ScarJo's okay.
You are a hunky boy, JC.
It's very true. We are both very hunky, curly-headed, curly-headed princes of the universe. We are.
Speaking of curly-headed princes, one other thought I was going to say. The dad, Greg, played by Adam Brooks, hilarious. So much fun. Every scene that he's in, I just thought he was great.
Yeah, the lazy as crap dad, deadbeat. It's so,
so dumb.
There are so many deadbeat dads in movies that if art imitates life, I just, wow.
Feel bad for these kids.
Yes, but I feel like that's probably, do you think that that's probably the norm?
Most likely.
So there's probably,
yeah.
I think sadly it probably is as well.
I think so. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up Psycho Gorman on. JC, is there another movie you watched recently that you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Like you, I watch so much that it's hard to be like I have to remember the last 10 things I even
definitely
watched. You're making a note now. You're like, edit, please edit.
I make notes all the time, so we're good.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay, like if you like these kind of like schlocky creature movies, I watched the one with Chloe Grace Moretz where she's in a bomber in the sky. It's called
Shadow in the Clouds, I believe.
Shadow in the Clouds. Did you watch that one?
I did. I did not like it that much, but I could definitely see the appeal though.
Yeah, well, it was like I'm saying if you like this movie and you like a good like creature little bit of suspense kind of movie like that, it was fine. Yeah. I watched it on like a Sunday night before work and I was like, this is great. Yeah. This is whatever. This is fine. You know, it's like, it's not the most epic monster movie ever, but it was an interesting take on that kind of stuff.
Totally.
Like, so basically, she's in a bomber. It actually, to me, it kind of played out almost like a radio play for a while.
Yeah.
Because it is like a lot of dialogue. She's just stuck in the little shooting bubble underneath the bomber. And it's like a lot of talking over the radio and stuff like that.
Sure.
But it is an interesting take on something. Oh, also, if you like movies like this, you might want to watch Freaky. That's been out for a while, but
now that was fun.
Freaky was fun. So, yeah. A movie similar to this, I'd probably check those out.
Cool.
Like I'm not going to be on an episode of like, talking about Psycho Gorman and be like, watch Malcolm and Marie.
Right.
Like, it's just not. No, go watch Shadow in the Clouds.
Almost did bring up Malcolm and Marie earlier, though, because of Malcolm talking about how movies just don't always have to be about something, you know? So, and Psycho Gorman is a good example of that. Yeah. I'll play that much.
But the thing is, you know, if you ask any actual professional screenwriter, they actually do need to be about something, though. Like, they
gotta be about
like
something.
If you read books on crafting screenplays and stories, they do. To get sold if you want to sell it.
Sure.
They do.
Yeah. There's got to be a little something there.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, JC, thank you so much for doing this as always. Why don't you tell people where they can find the podcast and everything you're up to?
Yeah, they can find me. I have a podcast. It is called Screen Fix, and me and a guest will we fix films. We will fix something recent or whatever. And, you know, we don't try to be rude. We know that a lot of people work on a movie. We're just having fun saying what we would have done. You know what I mean? And we will also sometimes tackle an older film. We're trying to be more constructive on the pod. I do have an episode coming up on the movie Catwoman, the terrible Halle Berry one.
Nice.
You know, so trying to tackle some classics that could maybe use a little bit of help. So stay tuned and check us out anywhere that you find your podcasts. Screen Fix, every movie could use a little help.
That's a good tagline there. I like it.
Thank you. It didn't work on any of the ads that we put out, so we got very little clicks. So still trying to find the proper tagline to hook them in.
Yeah. Well, let's just keep doing what we're doing, man.
But we're doing all right.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for doing the show again, JC, and I look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Thank you. You know you're the best podcaster there is in the biz doing movie podcasts. You are.
Thanks.
Don't even be humble. Don't even say I want it. You know it. You know it.
Thank you for saying those kind words.
Hey, I'm Josh Bell.
I'm Jason Harris. Hey, Josh, we're friends in real life, but we're also co-hosts on this new podcast called
Awesome Movie Year, where we take a look back at an awesome year for movies and do a deep dive looking at movies, including the Best Picture winner, the biggest movie at the box office, future cult classics, and more.
Including the biggest flop. And this season, we're doing 1994. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. That could be Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. We're all over the web as well. We've got Awesome Movie Year on all the socials and Awesome awesomemovieyear.com. So please like us, subscribe. And if you do like us, give us a 5-star rating because we love you.
All right. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Psycho Goreman. Thanks to JC from the Screen Fix podcast for stopping by to talk about it with me. He brought a lot of interesting insight into that filmmaker, huh? That's an interesting, different kind of way to approach these puzzle pieces. And, you know, I always love having all kinds of guest co-hosts on this show. And everybody kind of brings a little something different to the way they prepare for these conversations. So I love that about this podcast. And if you are out there listening and are interested in joining me for an episode, there are plenty of movies coming up that I'm going to want to talk about. So get in touch with me. You should join me for an episode. So that does it for today. I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on whatever podcast app you listen to podcasts on. And you can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. Don't forget about that Patreon I mentioned at the top of the show. We do have the new Awesome Movie Year content hitting this week. And I'm actually planning on recording a bunch of back-to-back Piecing It Togethers over the next week. So those will go up early over there on the Patreon. So you'll have access to those before they actually make it up on the regular schedule. And I am currently working on music for a new film, which when I'm done with that score, I may release it as a special bonus thing on the Patreon as well as a lot of other bonus stuff I'm planning for that Patreon. But I gotta get done with all these projects first. Otherwise, I just have no time. I don't know how I find time for anything as it is. But anyway, yeah, check it out. Produced by David Rosen, Patreon. So that does it for today. Let's close this thing out with a piece of music like I always do. And I think for a movie as crazy as Psycho Goreman, I'm going to go with this track called Devil from my album Head Like Fire, which is one of my favorite songs I've ever put out, honestly. I love this song so much, and I think Psycho Goreman himself would probably dig this track. So this is called Devil. Enjoy it, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon. Thank you.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.